welcome to another live episode of the Butterfly Evolution Show. We want to thank you all for tuning in with us today. This is a special edition of the Butterfly Evolution Show and a great union and connection with some more people, different groups that have joined. So we're going to tell you more about that in this session of the Butterfly Evolution. We have some exciting things to introduce and talk about, and going forward, we'll bring some information as to how you can tune in and participate in the things that we will be discussing and addressing going forward. So before moving forward, just want to go over a few housekeeping tips, reminders. If you are listening by way of chat, please know that you do have to be a registered follower of the show in order to submit your question or comment online. You can do that as you're on listening now, or as we're talking. You can do that now, or you can simply just call in for today using the call-in number 818-691-7406. You do have to select the number 1 if you are wanting to comment or make a question during this episode. So again, you do have to select the number 1 so that we know you are out in queue and wanting to come in with a question or a comment. What we're going to do, this is going to be a very relaxed show. For those of you who are regular listeners, you know that we typically are on the air Mondays only. We will start doing this the last Saturday of each month, and we'll tell you more about that as we go through the show. But this, again, is just kind of an awareness. We're bringing the information to you as what this is about, how we formed, what we plan to do together. And so that's what this is about. So just get your drinks, your coffee, your Cokes, whatever. Grab the family, grab friends, and sit around and start, if you have not already, start thinking about what's on your mind today as far as what's going on around in your city, wherever you are. Although this is Memphis Roundtable, this is about every city and every state, because if one city, one county, one state is going through it, oftentimes there's someone else going through it in another city and state as well. So basically, if you take nothing away from this show, do something. Don't wait until the tables turn in your personal life, because tables can turn instantly. Your child can go to school and be accused of something he or she did not do, and you will need a voice. So become a voice. Think about doing that now. What we're going to do is we're going to have Brandon. Well, before we have Brandon, we're going to have everybody introduce themselves, tell us whatever you want us to know about, or the audience to know about you, name, age, passion, purpose, talent, and then one additional thing that everybody has too. This is a surprise. Nobody knows this but me. But what is going on in the world today that you have a passion for or that is bothering you? So if there's one thing, and I'll start with me, the one thing that keeps coming to mind for me is parenting, the lack of the parent role in the lives of our children today. There just seems to be mothers and fathers missing. They're available in sight, but when it comes time to really engaging in the child's life, it seems that we are failing. So that is my topic. That is not that we'll talk about it today, but that's what really burns my fuel and starts the fire. So that's for me. So this is Tammy. We're going to give our name and whatever information you want to do. But if you could, just please tell one thing that's going on, or two.
Hi, this is Adrian, and I'm a part of the group Subliminal Thought, and I'm an artist and a musician, and I write poetry, and I'm trying to use these artistic aspects to put together a entity of truth and hold the mirror back up into the world's face and let them see a better reflection of what's going on. And what I would like to change about that reflection is what's going on with the food. And I know that we are what we eat, and I think it's kind of serious right now that we have a voice directed towards people who are over our food, and you know, the different things that are out here in society that, you know, can affect our, not only our stock and who we are as people, but the children we produce, you know. And I really think that'll change the way we function and how alert we are. Yes, that's all.
All right, I'm Lawrence. I'm the founder of Subliminal Thought. I'm 22. My passion is helping other people focus, well, understand what their passion is in life so they can help other people. One of the other things I focus on is actually getting people to see God first, because I think that's very important in this life, because either you're going to do that or get caught up with this world and all the delusions that go with that. One thing that I struggle with that I would want to change, I guess, is the level of poverty that I see in cities nationwide, especially in Memphis. I think that Memphis is a very oppressed city, and these individuals that, you know, are passionate about making a positive change to gather around each other. I think that's about it.
Rai Khurshid, member of Subliminal Thought, 22, a writer as well as a musician, and I joined Subliminal Thought to combat the continued diametric assault on Black America and the African diaspora.
All right, my name is Barrett Shaw. I'm a member of Subliminal Thought as well. I'm 21 years old. I'm a senior at Christian Brothers University, and I would say my passion is waking up God's people. I want to touch the youth, and I want to spread truth throughout the world, pretty much to, you know, just make people better and more aware of some things that they should be aware of.
My name is Bennett Foster, and I'm 27, and I'm a volunteer organizer with the Memphis Bus Riders Union. And I guess my passion is to organize people to make a radical change in how our economy is organized in a way that's more equitable for all people, as opposed to just a small percentage of society.
Brandon Shaw, 23 years old, junior philosophy major at the University of Memphis. I'm the co-founder of Subliminal Thought, also the editor of Subliminal Thought's newsletter, Subliminally Speaking. My main concern with the world today is changing the direction of the media, the most importantly, Black media, the way, you know, Blacks are portrayed on TV, on movie screens, and music. So my main goal right now is basically touching with different organizations, reaching a common base with everybody, being more open-minded to change. But overall, we have to change the way the media portrays the problems that we go through in society.
My name is Patrick Gant. I'm a member of Subliminal Thought. I'm a junior at Christian Brothers University. I'm 20 years old, and I want to eventually own my own business when I grow up, but I also want to help other people realize that they can be entrepreneurs and help them realize that you don't always have to work for other people. So I want to kind of set up businesses in impoverished neighborhoods and help people realize, you know, their potential. I'm about to hand it over to Tammy.
Thank you, and this is Tammy back on. Just wanted to give you a brief overview, allow you into the world of such a wonderful group of young people. So I hope people of age, I'll say it that way, if this doesn't inspire you to get up and make a change and start with some action in your life, again, to change within your community, it's something that we all can do. And that's what the Memphis Roundtable is going to be about, again, about a voice, about coming together before things happen. It's so often we sit back and allow the fire to burn without calling the fire department or whatever you want to say about that. But we allow things to go on till they are so far sometimes beyond healing or beyond being fixed, it seems. So there's some of these things that are going on in our world today that we can take hold of now. It starts with you. It starts with me. It starts with your neighbor. It starts with your family because, again, the tables can quickly turn. What we're going to do is we're going to have Brandon come back on and share about more about Subliminal Thought, how that came about, what what is behind subliminal thought. And then Lawrence is going to come back on and talk about the Memphis Roundtable more, and then we'll get into some of the topics that we're going to talk about tonight. Okay.
We started, me and Lawrence started Subliminal Thought last year around August. We had touched bases after like 3 years of like lost communication. We went to different colleges, and it was just crazy how like we just got back in touch. So ever since then, it's been like a growing challenge, intellectual challenge, spiritual challenge, most definitely. But we started it basically to spread light in Memphis, get a group of people together who are open-minded more than anything. You have a lot of organizations who have a set way of doing things, a set mindset on how to change things socially. But Subliminal Thought, I think, encompasses all of it. We more so want everybody to get in touch with their spiritual side over just emphasizing economic, you know, economic growth, political growth. It takes spiritual to get all of those things in the check. We've been going for like a good 7-8 months, and we since then we've started our own newsletter. We got a Facebook group page with 73 members. We have dedicated meetings like every Friday unless we have to cancel, but it's been pretty much steady. We've partnered up with the Living Wage Coalition with the PSA at the University of Memphis. We've joined Memphis United in the counter protest event for the Ku Klux Klan coming down to Memphis, Tennessee. And we've tried to touch bases with different organizations and different people who have the similar mindset as us. It's just trying to make a change for the better, trying to lead the people in the right direction instead of in the defeat, like spiritual defeat. But pretty much that's us in a nutshell.
Hey, this is Lawrence, and basically I guess we're supposed to talk about the roundtable and how it came together. Through Memphis United, that Brandon mentioned earlier, we networked, me and Ms. Tammy, through one of the early meetings, and she was talking about it. She needed people that wanted to come on and talk on a radio show, and I told her that Subliminal Thought was looking for an opportunity to basically speak. And through one of our meetings that we had on a Friday, we had a conversation and came to the conclusion that we could have like a central message together, Butterfly Evolutions through Ms. Tammy and Subliminal Thought and our members coming together and having a Memphis roundtable to discuss different issues socially that don't get paid attention to, whether it be education or, you know, the economic part, which Ben will speak on later. It's going to be every fourth Saturday of every month at 5 o'clock, if I'm not mistaken, and if we're going to have a continuous basis, you know, to promote these topics and get discussion going about whatever we decide to, you know, put out there. And it's pretty much what Memphis Roundtable is about, and we have a goal of trying to wake people up and being a voice for people who don't get hurt. Oh, yeah, and also being a voice for the youth, like Ms. Tammy. She's over 901 Butterfly Evolutions for little girls, and she's a role model for them, and she's trying to get Subliminal Thought to be involved with the young men. And we need more people to stand up for the youth in this city as well, and that's about it.
Thank you, everyone. And for those of you who are listening by phone, remember you have to select the number one if you have a question or a comment. And we do welcome your questions, your comments. If there's something you're going through now or you know of something that's going on within our city, and sometimes even outside of our city, because we'd like to be able to research and be a voice for everyone. Again, this is not just about Memphis. It's a start. As Lawrence and Brandon was talking about Subliminal Thought, I wanted to kind of piggyback back on their conversation or what they brought to you. You know, with going out, getting out, doing something again, so often we become so complacent in what we do, so routine in what we do, and we're just waiting for someone else to address those issues that we know is setting fire within us. And when I heard about Subliminal Thought, for me, I really did not know what subliminal meant. And, of course, so I go and look it up. And it was interesting to me that, and this is something I always suggest you do, start finding words that mean the same as a word and reference it, that sometimes help you to bring more clarity to that word or apply it, make it applicable to your life or in your situations. And so this subliminal, another word for subliminal is hidden, and it made me think about our hidden thoughts, those thoughts that we try to keep from everyone. We try to put a best foot forward, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when you think about hidden thoughts, when you have to hide your thoughts, you're either embarrassed, you're hiding it for a good reason, and in most cases, that is not you. You, when you have good news, you want to share it. So if you think about those hidden thoughts, it's about talking about those things that you need to address instead of hiding them. So this the meeting that I met this group at was just a meeting that I thought, you know, I'm going to go to, I'm going to be a part of, but I ended up making a great relationship with a group of young guys and ladies that are really about change. And the fact that they are their youth, their age, and that they are tackling issues, and I'm hoping Brandon can talk about the University of Memphis payroll, PS, if you can talk more about that. But they are tackling issues that we as older people, we've known these things are going on, but we have not did one thing about them. They could be your grandmother, it could be your aunt, it could be you, it could be me. So that's what Memphis Roundtable is about, addressing those issues that are going around in your city and in someone else's city as well. The 901 Butterflies and the youth will bring more about that as time progresses, and probably during our next show next month, we'll have more information on that. But the 901 Butterflies is already intact, so if anybody is interested in that, you know, please let me know through the Butterfly Evolution site. Do you want, and then we'll pass it to.
Okay. Well, Subliminal Thought, like I said earlier, has touched bases with a lot of organizations trying to be for the cause, any cause for the greater good. And recently, Subliminal Thought joined the Progressive Student Alliance at University of Memphis and the Living Wage Coalition. And that this coalition is basically different organizations like the Workers Interfaith Network, United Campus Workers, and several others who have basically combined forces to advocate the living wages of campus employees, starting from janitors to the staff in the kitchens. For the longest, you have staff members there who've been working there for like 20 years, and they still were making like $8 or $9 an hour. So we just had a speak out like 3 weeks ago where these workers came and spoke about their experiences, the living conditions, how they were barely able to pay for their bills after working for such a long time. And then they had the different organizations tell why they supported the Living Wage Coalition. In the Daily Helmsman, which just came out like 2 days ago, they announced that the PSA was successful in their endeavors, and they gave a 1.5% pay increase to all the campus workers, which I thought was a great step forward, because seeing that they met with the president of the University of Memphis, the PSA met with them, and it was a complicated meeting. She dodged their questions, but at the end of the day, she understood that she was under heat. You know, PSA is getting bigger. As soon as they combined with Subliminal Thought, we spearheaded a lot of, like, the effort going towards advocating for the betterment of the community workers. So, in short, PSA is moving forward because Subliminal Thought is basically being their driving force behind them. All right, now I have Bennett Foster come to us and speak about the Memphis Bus Riders Union. And the situation is the Matta bus station downtown is in the process of being torn down because of the building of the Bass Pro Shops. It's come to my understanding that they didn't like it there because they wanted to attract certain types of people to their area. Here you go, Bennett.
Bennett, come raw on that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as far as that goes, and I just want to say, like, thank you for inviting me, and I met Brandon CJ Shaw. Do they call you CJ or Brandon? All right. I met him at Memphis United, which is sort of started as like an ad hoc organization to have some kind of response to the Klan coming, and I met a lot of cool people there who wanted to feed that energy back into organizing. And so the situation with the terminal, first I just want to say that the Bus Riders Union just celebrated our one-year anniversary. We got together a group of people from Occupy Memphis and the Socialist Party and Peace and Justice Center and different groups, civil rights veteran activists like Mother Georgia King, to talk about the transit situation in Memphis, which, as we all know, is not up to par. It's not really handling transit-dependent people in the way it should be. And so we got together and decided to form a union, an unconventional union. It's not a union of people who are getting together because they all work at the same factory or whatever. It's a union of bus riders. We all experience the transit system, and we have to organize together to make a change in that way. And one of the things that we've been able to do with MATA is we've been able to push the board to institute a new policy for public input at the MATA board meetings. So we go to these meetings every month and try to get on the agenda. We email them a week ahead of time, and they put us at the end of the agenda after they've made all the decisions already, and then we speak on whatever it is. But eventually we were able to pressure them into changing that. So now it's like a city hall meeting. We go in and we write down what agenda item we want to speak on the card and turn that in, and we get to talk before they take a vote. So you've got the MATA administration in the room and the board members, and everybody's got questions, but traditionally they never had to listen to people who actually rode the bus talking about what the issues are, you know. So so that was our first target, and we won that. So now anybody can go to these meetings with an issue and speak on the agenda. By the way, the next MATA board meeting is the 25th. It's Monday at 3 o'clock. I think it's 1370 Levy Road. And this is the MATA headquarters and garage. And this Monday, we're going to be talking about the issue of the terminal, hopefully. The downtown terminal, we heard a rumor from a bus driver that the downtown terminal was being sold to the Bass Pro Shop because they are building their mega store inside the pyramid. As we all know, the city has spent somewhere around $70 million refurbishing the pyramid so that it doesn't sink into the Mississippi River. And then they gave Bass Pro Shop $30 million to renovate the inside. You know, one thing I want to say about that is Bass Pro Shop, since 2011, has been under federal investigation. There were lawsuits against Bass Pro Shop through the feds about discriminatory practices in hiring. So there were a lot of cases where Bass Pro was in trouble for not hiring black people who applied to have a job there. So, you know, you have situations where the city is giving all this money to a company that's not going to employ the majority of people who live in the city. They don't employ that demographic intentionally because that's not what their image. So
which is why they want to move.
Which is why they want to get rid of the downtown terminal, because 89% of bus riders are African American. A majority of those people are women. These are low-income workers, and they depend on the bus to get around. And the downtown terminal is a major hub because it's where you buy your bus passes, monthly, weekly, daily bus passes. It's there's bathroom facilities. It's air-conditioned on the inside with benches. So it's a major, you know, central location for people to get to from all over the city. And before they had that terminal, which is paid for mostly by federal funding, so I'm not sure Bass Pro is going to be able to get this, by the way. And also, I want to say that the mayor ultimately is the one who signs on this agreement. So we got to realize that the mayor's agenda, you know, we've got people like Robert Lipscomb and the mayor who are trying to change downtown, the face of downtown, to be this this corporate tourist attraction. They want to kick out the people in Foot Homes, which is over there near Vance Avenue, and turn that into Heritage Trail, which is a which is like a museum walking tour thing. So they want to kick out the people who have lived there since, you know, I mean, Foot Homes was around back in the cotton workers carnival back then, when there was the cotton carnival, and then there was the cotton pickers like carnival. They had their own because they were segregated, and I remember seeing pictures of Foot Homes participating in that parade. That's a very old community, and to displace all those people and send them around the city because you don't want to have this project near downtown, it really sends a message to the city. Is like, there's certain kind of people where we want to have downtown, and so that's just part of it. But yeah, that's one thing we're organizing around, and we're gonna keep everybody updated on that issue. Also the shelters, bus shelters are, you see bus shelters all over the city, but MATA did a study last year they paid for that identified what they call super stops, which is 200 to 500 people a day that get on in that location on the bus, and not a single one of them has a bus shelter. So this is places like Chelsea and Jackson, Watkins, Hollywood and Jackson, Chelsea and Watkins, 3rd and Mitchell. These areas don't have shelters, but these are the highest number of people waiting for the bus. But they're in poor neighborhoods. And so, you know, you see shelters all over Poplar, East Memphis, with ads on them and stuff because, you know, this actually points to a larger issue of the federal government cutting funding for public transportation every year. And then when it comes down to the city level, you've got officials who are making like $160,000 a year. Their car is paid for and detailed by MATA. And, you know, at the same time, we've got riders who are facing the consequences of this distribution of wealth that isn't really working out for people. So, yeah, that's what we work on. And I also want to say, if you want to get involved with the Bus Riders Union, our number is 205-9737. You can call me at 901-210-3768. I would have Sheila Williams with us. She's one of our core organizers, but she just had a baby, 8 pounds, 8 ounces. Yeah, 8 pounds, 8 ounces. So we're real proud of her, but, yeah, that's so far. That's
Will you give those numbers out again, please?
Yeah, that's 205-9737 is our voicemail. So you can leave a message about if you want to get involved with the union. We also have a Facebook, Memphis Bus Riders Union on Facebook. You can look that up. And my number is 901-210-3768. I can plug you in to whatever. We have monthly meetings on the second Saturday of every month. Our next meeting is April 13th from 12 to 2. At the Memphis Center for Independent Living, 1633 Madison Avenue, across from the Cash Saver on Madison. It's just like it's basically the easiest place to get to by bus.
It's also where Hope
Meets. And we're also going to be there on the 30th at the fairgrounds for the Memphis United event. We're part of that coalition, so.
Thank you, Bennett. I learned something. I really have not heard much about this until today. We kind of touched on it at a few of the meetings that we've had the past few Fridays, but thank you, because you provided just a bundle of information. And this is why such a platform is needed. Just the mere fact that the highest number of people that ride the bus are in our poverty areas, but no shelters. So they have to get up, prepare for work, in most cases, ride a bus, If it's raining, what do they do? If it's snowing, what do they do? I just passed, as I mentioned yesterday at the meeting, I passed an elderly lady standing out waiting for the bus in the rain, and it broke my heart. I wanted to turn around and pick her up and take her home and whatever else I could do for her. I mean, I really cried, teared up, had to get myself together. Because, and then if you turn around, it reminded me of telling Brandon, my son, one day in Atlanta at a Walmart as this elderly lady was putting her things in the car. And before I knew it and anybody else knew it, he was over there helping her. And I said, Brandon, you can't do that anymore today because people will think you're trying to rob her and so will she. And he was like, I just refuse to give in to that. But and he was right, he shouldn't. But I'm looking out for my black male son who will not be looked at as I'm going over to help her. He's going to be looked at as I'm going over to rob her. But again, what I did was wrong, so I have to just let him be. But these are the issues that we want you guys to tell us about. If you're sitting at home watching TV all day, on Saturday, on Sunday, during the week, these are the kind of things that you can take a part in. So the meeting is, the next meeting is April 13th from 12 to 2. And Bennett provided the numbers. I'm going to give you that number again. The voicemail number is 205-9737. Bennett's number is 210-3768, and that is his cell number. That shows passion, people. That shows purpose. And I hope Bennett doesn't mind. Bennett is not a black man. He's a white man. So, and I want to share that because that shows his passion. That shows that he has a love for humanity, for people, all people, regardless. And so often we want to sit back and think, oh, because I'm in my house, I have my car, I have food, I have lights, I have everything that I need and more than I need. So we see the next person as not my issue, not my problem. They should know this. They should do this. But people are in so much bondage and hurting so much and came from bondage, and they have become hopeless. So their situation is their situation, and it's better. That's better than what they can see beyond that, which is sometimes nothing. So as a voice, if we come together and we march at MATA and say we want, if nothing else, to start shelters, if nothing else, and then we go from there. But once they see that we're no longer going to sit back and allow people that we pay to do what they want to do, because if I hire you, I'm sorry. If I'm paying you, then you need to follow the rules. And we need to make the rules. They don't need to make them. They need to come to our meetings so that they can keep their jobs. We shouldn't have to look for them.
That's right.
So I will get going and talking on this too much. So somebody else.
Woman Stanley was talking about us doing something about these issues, whether it's just us going down there to march just to get shelter for these individuals in these impoverished areas. I think that that's really key that we talk about any of these issues that sit in the city that don't get talked about and that we gather around them as a people, because the people are supposed to be the voice and nothing to get done if you don't say anything, right? So that's all I want to say on that note.
Thank you, Lawrence. Thank you, everybody. We do have a caller. We're going to start pulling you in. And remember, if you do want to, if you have a question or if you want to make a comment about anything, not just what we're talking about today, about anything, and we'll write it down and we'll go from there. But we're going to pull a caller in from the 901 area code. The last four digits is 7462. Again, 901, and the last four digits of your number is 7462. Caller, you're on the air with us.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi.
Hi, Brandon. Hi, Bennett.
Hello.
Is this Kate?
Zoe says hi. This is Karen Central Michigan.
Who do we have with us? We're sorry. You know all of us, but tell us.
Karen Central McGee.
Oh, Karen. How are you, Karen?
Oh, yeah.
How are you?
I am well.
I wish you were here with us.
I just wanted to say I am so glad to actually be a part of this platform And I bless the youth that are there, Lawrence, Brandon, CJ, especially Bennett, because you all are going to be the ones that lead us into the future. We've been dead in Memphis, Tennessee for about 40-something years. And when I see youth that are willing to let go of stigmas and stand up for other people, people that don't look like them, don't smell like them, it's eye-opening to know that that they're leading. And we haven't seen that in such a long time here in Memphis. And I'm very, very proud of Memphis United and the Butterfly Evolution and all of these new grassroots people that are coming up with the Mid-South Peace and Justice Center that are actually standing in solidarity about things that are in our community and willing to stand up to change them. The Bus Riders Union, at first everybody thought it was a joke, but those youth stuck and stayed, and when Mother King got involved and everybody else, they actually now are paying attention. So don't count it robbery that you all have a spiritual gift and people are looking at you. As soon as I saw Subliminal Thoughts and the youth with that group and they were looking at me, it was like, okay, the spirit knows the spirit. I fight like a girl, and you got all these strong kings that are willing to come up with this queen and say, hey, there's some issues in our community that need to be addressed. Show us how we can get together and fight this thing. And I'm just so proud that while Memphis is healing, that we have young people that are not walking around with the bridges hanging off their behinds, that are not walking around cursing and degrading women, that are actually standing up and being the kings that they were purposed to be. So, again, you know, I just wanted to tell you all that I am so, so proud of you guys, and I love you with the love of God. And Miss Tammy?
Yes.
Tonight we have at the Mid-South Kwanzaa Center on Elvis Presley, we have open mic night. So some of the people that are in Subliminal Thoughts, I know that some of them do open mic, and I'd like to invite them to come out. It doesn't cost anything. We just want to know what's in your heart and what's on your mind.
And this is tonight?
Yes, 1489 Elvis Presley at the Memphis Kwanzaa Center. And there are a lot of things coming up in Memphis that don't get the recognition that it should. And the Memphis Kwanzaa Center is one of those that's teaching the seven principles of Kwanzaa 365 days a year, 7 days a week. So it's a new center that's open. We'll be doing HIV and AIDS education. We'll be doing food, and I will get you your invite.
Okay, and what time does it start tonight, Karen? I'm sorry, I know you said that, but what time?
7 o'clock. It starts tonight at 7 o'clock.
Okay, and is there a charge? You said free?
Oh, no. There's no charge for knowledge.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you, Karen, and such a delight. It was just such a delight to connect with you and meet with you, and I feel the same way. I share the same thoughts as you. When I saw these young people on fire and not as the media would have us to think that all of our young people are doing things that will have them go to jail, so to speak, so doing the wrong thing. So thank you, Karen, and I'll give a shout-out to what you're doing tonight again before we get off the show, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Peace.
Everybody say thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I want to, when Karen mentioned about Memphis being dead, is for those of you who don't know, when I'm outside, and for some of you that maybe travel as well, people, when they hear that you're from Memphis, I've been asked so many times, why do you want to live in Memphis? That city is crime, is so high, people are so rude, and da-da-da-da-da. But Memphis is known by many as the city of the dead. If you've never heard that before, but people refer to Memphis as the city of the dead. And I remember there have been times where I think, Lord, what am I doing here? But he will not let me leave. So that means that there's purpose here, there's potential, right? There's things that we need to do, that we should not be sitting back being quiet as people are going through things that we can help with. We will pass people that are hungry and not be moved by it. We will pass people that we know we're going home to our warm beds, our warm life, and we're not even concerned. And not everybody has made a choice to be in the situations that they're in. So, this is Lawrence.
I think that we are the individuals. I mean, if you're aware of the problem, that I think is your responsibility to do something about it, or if you take to the side of the people who are forcing that issue. But I think if you're aware of these things, like I said, that we need to come together. We are the people that need to stand up for all these different individuals who get ignored on that end. That's all I want to say, Chairman.
This is Raid again. Going back to the idea of Memphis being a dead city, that's very funny because Memphis itself, its name is taken from basically a city of the dead, which also goes into the fact that Memphis is the only city in America that is named after an African prince, an Egyptian prince, to be exact. In Egypt, the city Memphis, or the ancient city of Memphis, was indeed a home of the dead, and it focuses on spirits and whatnot. I find that, or those connections anyway, to my own city, my own hometown, very disheartening. Like Lawrence said, there is a lot of untapped potential here, and it needs to be developed, should have been developed yesterday. Unfortunately, the powers that be here, they honestly don't see it and put their money supporting, quote-unquote, tourists. I believe that their prime directive is to make Memphis, as of today, basically a live-in museum. No more, no less. It's less about the black community here and more about the dollars that, quote-unquote, preserved Bill Street makes, / Graceland, and other places like that. But this group, hopefully, among others here in Memphis, will help change all of that and will help stabilize things here and bring some light on a pretty grim situation.
Ben, I want to say something, then, if you'll introduce Rose.
Yeah, I just want to say, coming full circle with this, you know, connectedness that we're talking about, like once you look at the math and the statistics, you realize that the connectedness and how you, what position you take in that structure. And I think that, like, what you're talking about with the Memphis being untapped, I feel like in some ways, it's some certain people are tapping into the fact that Memphis experiences so much poverty because that keeps the wages low, and so people build their factories here. We've got low cheapest labor, and we've got no income tax. So all the states around Tennessee come into Memphis and use the Med and use our streets and our roads and our resources, and then go back home. And I think that it's interesting because, you know, and with the payment in lieu of taxes, they call it pilot tax incentives that we give to corporations to come in here, and they say, oh, we're going to give you 600 jobs, which we never see, and so we give people all this land and all this cheap labor, which is created because of the poverty, because as long as we've got poor people, y'all all understand this, as long as there's poor people, then, you know, the factories can say, well, we're only going to give you $7.50 an hour for this job because there's a lot of people, you know, and people will take that job because it's like, well, I could be, you know, I could be on the street or I could take this cheap wages. So, and it's all connected because we all, in some ways, we benefit off of that, and we've got to realize that, like, that suffering is a commodity in the way that this system works. So that's all I got.
This Rose has just joined us. She was not here at the beginning and did not introduce herself. So we're going to ask you to just give your name, tell us something about you, and then you were going to talk about the event that's coming on Saturday as well, right?
A little bit.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Rosalind Delacroix. I live here in Memphis. I started up a nonprofit organization called I Am Memphis with a friend of mine, Michael Scott. We focus on progress, prosperity, and unity in inner city communities, focusing on youth education and progress. I can say for myself, I went to school in Philadelphia, New York, and when I told people that I was moving to Memphis, they were afraid for me, even though I was living in South Philadelphia, where if anybody has been there, I mean, it is a rough neighborhood. You think Orange Mound is rough? You need to live in South Philly. It is rough. And I will say I love this city. I really do. I think that the people here are courageous. I think that there's a lot of spirit in this town. I hate to see that there is so much potential, and yes, we are being disenfranchised, and our government is being pressured by other states and by other corporations to make sure that wages are low, cost is low, and you're exactly right. If I am person A, and the only job for me is a factory job that will only pay in Tennessee will pay me $7.20 an hour. But the same job at the same factory, let's say in North Carolina, will pay that person $15 an hour. And why they think that they can do this? Because our government doesn't have the voice of the people. They sit up there, and I literally live right across the street from City Hall. And it's like they're in another world. It's like they don't realize what is going on here. They don't realize that I talk to girls once a week who are 13 years old and pregnant. They don't realize that there is an organization called Serves and that I volunteer at three times a week that helps men and adult men and women with mental and physical disabilities. And they are there because Memphis has said, you know, out of sight, out of mind sort of thing. And that's not right for them. These are people that cannot defend themselves. And we have become a community to where we have tried to instill leaders to speak for us. But once they get in City Hall, we are all out of sight and out of mind. And I can tell you that I have worked with Bass Pro and I have worked with Pinnacle. And the way that they do things is terrible. I can tell you right now, Bass Pro Shop is not going to be putting nearly anything in that pyramid. They keep telling us that they will. And why did they do that? Because of corporate tax incentives. Because every time that they put themselves in the paper or every time they build some new drainage system down there by the pyramid, Memphis hands them $2 million a year. $2 million a year that we could be putting into our failing schools. We could be putting books, pencils, and computers in children's hands. But instead, we're shelling out money like it's lottery tickets to corporate foundations that do not care anything about us. Same with Pinnacle. Pinnacle moved downtown. And again, I saw this happen. Pinnacle moved downtown. They promised us over 18,000 jobs. There are literally right now 150 people in the Pinnacle building. And you want to know what they do? They're warm bodies. They don't do anything. They don't do anything. But then again, every year you can go down and check the census records. Memphis last year handed Pinnacle $1.75 million. Yeah, that would do a lot. I mean, for me, I'm thinking, what about our homeless shelters? What about our young people? Yeah, exactly. Capital improvement, but like we are giving more to these corporations than we're even spending on ourselves. And coming from going to school in New York and seeing some of the stuff that they go, I will say that from what I've told my friends that are in politics up north, they are flabbergasted. I mean, open jawed, hit the floor that this goes on here in Memphis, in the United States, and it doesn't faze people. And nobody, the great thing is, nobody knows about it.
That tells me you can't look for any outside help. You know, in my opinion, like, that's why I keep pouring back to us. Like, we're the people that have to stand up for these different issues in order for those things to change, because we can't look for any corporate help or any outside entity that's,
right,
that's going to come in and understand the people as well on that end. But here we go.
I think that if we can inform more people and tell them, you know, if you want these records, they're public records. You can go down to the library and you can get them. You can go down to City Hall and you can ask for them. And by law, because of the Transparency Act of 2011, they have to give them to you.
So tell people what they would have to do to go and ask. Just give a scenario of walking in there saying,
okay,
I want this.
Okay, what you would have to do is that you go into City Hall, and when you go in there, there's going to be some really nice security guards. One of them is Stan, and the other name is Evan. And you go up to them, you're going to go through the metal detectors, and you're going to say, hey, where's the records room? And they will point you in the direction of the records room. Now, when you go into the records room, there's either going to be Shania or her friend, and I can't remember her friend's name, even though she has really nice hair. Oh, she does. It's always different. You go in there, and usually what I say is, hey, because of the Transparency Act of 2011, as a Memphis citizen, I have a right to see blank records. I have a right to see the financial records from 2011, from 2010, from 2009, from 2012. And by law, they have to give them to you. Now, sometimes it may take a little time. But by law, they have to give them to you within 30 days. And if we can get more people in there, and if we can get people to say, hey, this is wrong, and keep them informed, that will really open the city up. And sometimes I feel like I'm the only person that does it, that actually goes down there and asks for these, because I want
to
see them.
I can go with you next.
Oh, yeah. We can definitely go. It's we can make a date. We can have some coffee. It'll be good. then we can drool over all the money that Memphis is wasting. But every time that I see one of these corporate handouts, I see buses, I see roads, I see textbooks, computers, programs for the disenfranchised, for mentally and physically disabled, for people that really can't care for themselves. I'm seeing Meals on Wheels.
Seeing the library
open past, and maybe we could get some computers in there that don't crash all the time and that actually have Microsoft Word on them. that's what I see, and I hope that one day, and I hope that it's one day soon, that we will be able to have someone to speak on behalf of us and say, hey, this is wrong. When we gave, you know, $1.7 million to Pinnacle, we could have done that. And, I mean, what about Central High School? What about, what is that one that Obama went to? What is it called? What about Booker T. Washington High School? How about give them Chromebooks? You know, those little laptops? A Chromebook costs $250. It is a laptop. They can get on the Internet, and they can do their schoolwork on Google Docs. You know how much that would open up a young person? $250. And if you go to Google and say that you're a school, most likely they will donate them to you, but they don't do that here. They will donate to them for free. 9 times out of 10. And now I do, there's a couple schools downtown that have them, but those couple schools are private schools, and they're primarily white. Of course. Of course.
I think more so you see the private schools. You got Christian Brothers High School. There's another private school on Central Avenue. What is it called?
Immaculate Conception.
And it's like you look at those schools as opposed to charter schools. Private schools they're sturdy. They have a stable foundation. Charter schools, it's like they're giving funds, but they're giving a lack of resources. So I think it's more so we got to arm our youth with knowledge, arm ourselves with knowledge. Like you said, going into City Hall, going out and getting it yourselves. Like, a public library is a treasure trove of knowledge in itself. I couldn't tell you how much information I got from the University of Memphis Library just because it's open till like 12 a.m. So that's different.
We do have a caller. I'm going to pull you in just a second here, but just a good example, the Memphis Library. You know, here we are putting all these funds into nonsense, basically, where a child, most of our children don't, all of them don't have computers at home, really. So the library, and they've taken a lot of them, from my understanding, out of the communities. A lot of them have closed down. So the main library, we found, I found this out last Friday because we were up there meeting, closes at 5 o'clock on Friday night. I mean, really, if this is where our youth can be on Friday night, if they have reports and things like that, why? And they say because of funding. But the funding now is going somewhere else. So we do have a caller. Caller, we're going to pull you in from the 617 area code, the last four digits 0663. Caller, you're on the air with us.
All right. Yeah. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I know who you are, but tell everybody who you are and where you're.
My name is Pastor Darwin Harris. I'm out of the Boston community, but I would like to say I'm a part of the national community because I love this conversation that you're having, and I guess for those of you that are out there, and I think Sister Tammy, that maybe there's a possibility, because where can you galvanize, and where can you find pockets of people where you have poverty, but also there's some education? We should be able to go to the churches. We should be able to gather pastors who, one, have the potential academic and the ability. And the masses of people, where we can start this conversation within the church, because I mean, where has most of the economic change, or at least awareness? This is something we can talk about every Sunday. This is something we can talk about. People, let's get together, and then just imagine if you could get all the pastors and their congregations to begin to approach City Hall. Now you got numbers.
Imagine that.
Yeah,
everybody's sitting here just really trying to imagine that happening.
and the sad thing, and this is, and I'm gonna speak to it because I'm clergy, and I'm sad to say that even some of us have gotten so comfortable in our poverty that, and how can we sit there and looking at the people in our congregation starving, hungry. No education, no opportunity. Martin Luther King talked about, if we only talk about heaven and don't deal with the slums that damn our community, then the religion that we have is dry as dust. It ain't real. It ain't. It's not the religion or the Christianity that Christ came, because Christ came in and he had a social awareness. He came out and he fed people. He came out and talked about. He talked about all these things that we're talking about now. So this is very much a something that every pastor, every church should have a sensitivity to, because if we consider ourselves the men and women of God that we are, and we have a sense of sensitivity to the people that we serve, then we should be able to come together, galvanize these people. We should be able to gather and get the numbers, the numbers, because these people who are only making $750, they're working people, they're responsible adults, even though they might be under the poverty level, and we should begin to petition, like, hundreds and thousands of names, and begin to go down and show these people in government that these are the people who are going to vote you in or vote you out of office if you don't do something about this. But we got to have a voice that comes from a place where it resonates, not just a few voices, but, we got all these big churches with all these people in it. Well, that's where we could begin this conversation, and then we have men who, recently learned, if they're trained, that means they have the education and the ability and possibly the audience where these conversations should be continuing, and I hope that you and Memphis and me and every other pastor that might be listening and every other brother that's in leadership, that we can begin to start talking about, now let's get us a ministerial council and talk to these brothers and say, how do you feel about this? And I'm sure if they knew that information that you guys are able to pull out and say, look at what's going on, and we can expose the government, like the sister said, we can expose them and how they're paying others to come, and then at the expense, because guess what? Poverty is good business as long as the people who poor don't realize that they can do better. Poverty is good business. You know, that's almost slavery. When you can work every day 40 hours a week and still be below the poverty level, and the government that's subsidizing the corporations, you know, you guys should be able to create some kind of deal where we can cut that money in half, or create what those corporations that are coming in, that we can make them commit financially to the community that they're in, that they're drawing all the resources from. So I guess that's all I have to say, but I definitely believe I would hate to think that you can't approach these pastors, and if they don't want to get on board with this, expose them too. Put a little pressure on them, you know, with this information, and that I pray that they would be just like, you know, during the period of the Martin Luther King and others that are come, where we can go and we can begin to have this argument of about empowering the community and raising Memphis to the next level economically.
Pastor Harris, this is Lawrence. I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
When you were talking about the churches having a role in these social issues, I totally agree with you. I think there's I don't want to say that the church is, but it is kind of hypocritical to some degree. If you're preaching the message of Christ and you're supposed to love everybody and, you know, defend the poor as such, that there shouldn't be poverty surrounding all these churches if they're so close to each other in proximity where they're located, especially in Memphis. But I agree that the church should rise with a voice to stand up for some of these social issues and take part and expose the government for the poverty issues that we have in the city that don't get touched on. I'm totally right there with you.
Yeah, I think, brother, if you tap into and find you a few pastors that will lead or begin to, you know, I pray that, and I think, and I'm trying to think of who I know down that way, that's right there in Tennessee, that they should be a voice. And when you talk about, I got 10,000 members, you got 10,000 members? I mean, and they should be able to take their group and then be able to pull in the other smaller churches and just think of what kind of noise they could make, and how they could expose, because you're right, there is a social responsibility to the gospel that we preach. There is a social responsibility. You know, we cannot say that we love God, because if we love God, that means we have an affinity and affection for the people that we serve. In the church that I am, in the community that I am, and wherever I've ever been, is I look out there every Sunday and I ask myself and I tell people, if you want social services, what are you doing that you could be? What can you do to change your situation? If you got a job, can you get a business? If you are doing some things, should you go back to school? I mean, you know, and the message that I preach, and I use the scripture to support that, it's all about change. It's all about, you know, it being transformed, not just, you know, in a spiritual sense, but we should be able to, and we should have a social responsibility. So I guess that's all I have to say. And I thank God for you, Sister Tammy, you, Brother Lawrence Crozier. I then thank God for all of you that are out there, and I hear the voices. It sounds like, you know, we got a catch of people there that are not just black, but some people who just care. And I thank God for this conversation that y'all having. And I will be praying for you, and I'm looking forward to hearing about great things that you guys are doing.
Well, thank you. If you have, Rose has a question for you or comment. So do you have time for just one more?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Okay. I pulled over my car, and I'm going to sit here because I can't move. I'm stuck. I got to hear this.
All right. Pastor Harris, you're in Boston right now. Am I correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay. There is a saying here in Memphis that a long time ago we thought was put in the history books, and it is, everybody here familiar with separate but equal?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Separate but equal. Now, Memphis is a separate but, quote, equal city, where what's really interesting, coming from the north, what I've seen is that there are, quote, white churches and there are black churches. There are white neighborhoods, black neighborhoods, white schools, black schools, and it seems like there is no middle ground. Here in Memphis, is everybody here familiar with the Mall of Memphis? I'm gonna educate you in a little history here in Memphis, sir. We had something called the Mall of Memphis. It was a huge mall back in like 90s? In the 90s. I mean, we had Gucci, Prada, like it was a really high end store. A couple years went by, and then the demographics of the mall started changing to where there were more blacks than there were whites. And because of that, all the people that, all the really rich people in Memphis that live out in Collierville and Germantown and all these suburbs, well, they didn't like the demographic change, so they stopped going there. When the white people stopped going there, that's when the stores started pulling out. And then after that first shooting, there was a shooting and people did die first. That is when Prada, Gucci, Fendi, Bath and Body Works, everything pulled out of it to the point of where,
wow,
after it was said and done, the mall was up for what, 4 or 5 years? About 4 or 5 years, right? And they had to demolish the mall that they had built, used almost $2 million to build. It's a waste of money. But the thing is that here, yes, I believe that pastors and churches should have a larger part of this, but the terrible thing is that there's white churches and black churches, and they don't commingle for some reason. I think it's the vision of the denominations where your black inner city churches are talking about community efforts, things that they can do. They have programs that your kids can go to after work or after school, where the white churches like Bellevue Baptist Church are more concerned about who's gay in their congregation.
Mm. Mm.
I have a question on how do we combat that? When this separate but equal is so deeply ingrained, not only in white folk, but black folk as well, to where we can't go out in Germantown and drive a car. Why? Because there's something called a DWB, driving while black. And you will get pulled over, you will be fined, and they will tell you to get out. That has happened to a good friend of mine. His name is Juju Bushman. Great guy. Pulled over, they gave him a ticket and told him, boy, you better get out of my town.
Oh, my goodness.
In the churches and in faith, how do we combat that type of deeply ingrained, I'm going to call it racism?
And it really is. And I have a brother who is, I'm in Boston. I'm originally from Washington, D.C. I've been a part of a few different communities. And I guess because of my affection and love and admiration and respect for what I'm hearing, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I got enough money to move to Tennessee. I'm sitting here now, and I'm saying in that sense that I just believe that I heard someone say to me, and as I even look at, you know, the people that I talk to, even the African Americans that I talk to, and we talk about the bondages within our own community, but and the statement was, you know, we cannot facilitate growth beyond our own self. So if the man that stands behind that sacred desk still sees himself as only black and not just a man who has a message, you know, that I just believe that the first empowerment had to be the person who believes that he can have this conversation, because and I see, like, right now I'm in Boston and I serve in an inner city church, but I work with and I'm having conversations with other white pastors, and we talk about these issues, and I'm the one who begins. I'll bring it up. You know, why aren't we talking about this? You know, why don't we do something about this? And I think what happens is when somebody reaches across the aisle, I believe that we can find some white pastors, but somebody has to reach across. Somebody has to say that the God that I serve and the my concept or my philosophy of and my perception of God is enough to where I can tell you I don't, you know, any issues that we have that we should be able to talk them through and be able to collaborate, because I just can't imagine that if I get on my knees every night like I do, I'm always confronted with my personal fears of the past, but how through those things, you know. So I guess my thought is, I just wish that I'm going to look up and find out who some of these persons that I know, and I'm going to ask some of these if I can find some pastors within my network that I know. But man, I'm just sitting there thinking that I would love to be in an environment like that because I believe
We do plan on have. We talked about this last week. I believe it was last week about having future topic having a roundtable of just pastors because we want to have them address some of our concerns because you mentioned or somebody mentioned about some churches have as much as 10,000 members and I will be willing to bet you that half of those members are probably in poverty or so close to it. You know, and can't go to the church that they have ties to for years if they need help on a light bill without getting the third degree. So we are going to open that door and have a platform for that, and we welcome you to come down or at least be a part of it.
And here's what some pastors don't know because I come out of the corporate community. I've been I've been a vice president of a mortgage company. I've been a president of a mortgage company. I mean, I've done a little bit. I've been a part of the corporate community. And what some of the pastors don't know, they're so caught so far in extreme in their theology that they don't realize that the pastor of today should understand how to develop a CDC. The pastors of today should recognize about the economic, how we can purchase. I mean, I'm working with pastors now who are buying houses, buying businesses, and not for themselves and for their own personal net worth, but saying now we have a way to be able to bring dollars and cents and we can own and then we can begin to control our community because now I don't have to ask you to give me a job. I own the mall. I can give my kids a job themselves. I can take those brothers that can't get a job and who are having issues or might have had some challenges in the past, and I'll waive that, Corey, and I'll give them a chance to work in this place and give these kids a chance, and then I can take that same money and bring it back to the church and grow the church in a sense of how can we take this money again and use it again where the church becomes such a force in the community because right now we have this only shout on Sunday, do what we do on Sunday, and then we go back to our hamlets and we don't make any noise. We don't talk about, and the church can have an arm, even though they don't want us talking about it within the church. They talk about, separates of church and state. But if I create a CDC, then we can have these conversations and we can have voting drives and we can talk about, these kind of conversations and create just somewhat of the same thing that we saw at the same time during the Civil Rights Movement, where everybody across the board, there were white pastors that were with Martin Luther King. There were all kinds of groups that were with Martin Luther King, and all of them were religious. We could have these conversations because we had one common problem. The common problem is our inability to get together. And then the other part is that, help me, that this system that we are part of, as we hear, and the sad thing, over there in some of those churches that we see, the big white churches, they kind of like have somewhat of a Mitt Romney kind of attitude, that 47% of the people don't even count anyway because we're in the top 1%. I got mine, and I'm really not concerned about the empowerment of others, but I do believe that we should begin to grapple with this subject and begin to put this in their face and make them say, publicly put them out there and say, if you don't, I'm gonna make it known, what your real position is. And I believe sometimes we have to, we have to be, forced to be put the mirror in our face, and hopefully the image that we see that we don't like, and we do something about changing it.
Well, thank you, and everybody here is nodding, giving you an okay. And they're saying, "Come to Memphis, right? Come to Memphis."
I'm looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to this. I love your show, and I thank you for the voices that I hear. It sounds like you have a young white young lady who is just very aggressive and supportive, and honest. And
she's
fair.
Asking how to know.
I thank God for her. And these are the kind of relationships. She'd be one of the sisters I'd be trying to recruit in my church.
We also have Bennett here. You missed the conversation on the MATA situation, so be sure to go back and listen to that part. But
I sure will. And I thank you for allowing me to be a part of this conversation. And please keep doing what y'all are doing. Please.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, we do have another caller, and I think this will be our last one for the night. We're going to go ahead and bring it to a close here shortly. So we're going to take, this is from the 901 area code with the last four digits of 9834. Caller, you're on the air with us. Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Yes, my name is Detrick Gold, and I've just been listening to you guys, and I want to applaud you guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Yeah, I just want to applaud you guys. There's a lot of young people on here. I'm 36 myself, and I'm actually running for mayor in 2 years. And one of the reasons why I chose to run is since I played for the University of Memphis, I've seen both sides of Memphis. Like, I sit down with millionaires who make decisions. But I also feed the homeless every Monday, and I'm in the neighborhoods where poor people are. And I remember specifically when I played in Memphis back in 98, when my mom was living in her village projects, and she received a letter, and the letter basically said that, sign this, move out, we're going to fix this location up, you'll be able to move back. And that was back then, and this 2013, and now she lives in Foot Homes, that's where they relocated her to. And now they're kind of doing the same thing to the Foot Homes residents. And the stats say only one of six of those people that move out are able to move back into those neighborhoods. And at the center I'm located at, which is Greenlaw Community Center, I remember a guy named Henry Turley, who's a friend of mine, ironically. He built Harbortown, and he built a lot of things that's going on downtown. He actually wanted to tear down Greenlaw Community Center and build an elementary school there. And so I had to go to the Poplar Foundation, Elliot Perry, some, you know, important people that I know, to keep it open. And not only did they keep it open, we got $500,000 to fix the building up. But I was just thinking, what if I didn't play for the University of Memphis? What if I didn't have a name? That center would be an elementary school right now. And I think the pastor mentioned about getting pastors together, which is a great idea. I love that. But a lot of those pastors are friends with council members and important people, decision makers. So they're not going to be so quick to, you know, jump on a bandwagon to really improve the city. Unfortunately, that's the sense. And like, I'm kind of torn between the two, like the two sides, because like, I'll give you another example. It's this organization called Cornerstone that took over Lester Middle School. And Penny Hardaway, he's over there. He's a friend of mine. And a lot of the community members over there, they're in an uproar about what's going on over there. And so I was talking to Penny on Tuesday, him and some more activists, and he was kind of sharing what was going on. And he said he had to speak in one of their little ordeals. And he told the people, I live in South Wind, but I stay in Binghamton, and the place erupted. And so I kind of want to, you know, hear more about that and kind of maybe, you know, help them with their cause. But one of the people that I work for, well, I work for Memphis Athletic Ministries, and Elliot Perry, he's a board member for MAM, and he's also one of the people that brought Cornerstone to that particular school. And so now they're telling me, because I mentioned Elliot's name, and that was like, well, he's with those people, and they're basically saying he's with the white people. He's kind of sellout. That's what they're saying. And so now I'm trying to, you know, weigh what to do. And it's good that you are involved. Yeah,
this I'm here. Brandon. Brandon Shaw, co-founder of Subliminal Thought, along with Lawrence. I agree with what you're saying. I understand the direction you're going. Basically, I think the way to deal with the pastors who are basically being irresponsible at this point, who have these mega churches, is to, if we do come to the point where we do confront them with issues in Memphis, if they decline it, we must expose them at all possible costs. Because, they basically asked for it. Basically, how we confronted a problem at the University of Memphis with the living wages is by confronting the president of the campus. She dodged the questions, like, throughout the whole meeting, but she started getting more and more under scrutiny, and more the media was starting to get attention, negative attention to the University of Memphis, she immediately changed her attitude and gave a pay increase.
I feel that, but the church is a little bit different because they're a nonprofit, basically, and what the church do is they give board members who have their back 100%. So they're not. That's why you don't hear about pastors being fired from their jobs.
Right.
Because they're making so much money, and they're paying their people to always have their backs, if you will. So I think the best thing to do is put you guys' causes out there, and hopefully some pastors that have a heart for what you guys have a heart for will come on board. But I think even if you get a pastor to come on board, if he doesn't have the heart, because what you guys have, you have a heart for what you believe in. And you have to have like-minded hearts, not just people who are going to feel that pressure and going to come on board. You need, because that won't last. Because when things happen like that in Memphis, it'll happen and it'll be an uproar, but then that dies down quickly and everybody back to their regular schedule program.
Yes.
I think you got to have people whose heart are the same as you guys and then move forward from there.
Dedrick, this is Tammy. I certainly agree with you, and thank you for bringing up that point. If and my response to how do you reach or get, if you have a pastor that is not on board, and as Brandon Shaw said, then you expose them. From there, in addition to that, I'll say we have to start working on the people that make up the congregation, the people that are paying those tithes, that are keeping that mega church going. So if you can't reach them, then help to change the mindset, help to transform those people out of their bondage, out of their situations, out of their mindset. If we can reach just a few of those who can reach just a few more, it starts there. Because I agree, we're not, there are going to be some pastors, and like you said, they have the hookup. They're all in this little clique together. And if you go to the right one or the wrong one, they could call the next one and say, they're coming. You know, and they're not going to give up their paycheck, but you can certainly give up what you're giving to them. We can get out of this mindset of, I know you're doing this, but I'm going to give you my money anyway. I'm going to come and sit under your teaching anyway. Not that any of us are perfect. However, we should, everybody in certain positions, regardless of the positions, we need to be held accountable, period. And if we can't reach the top, then you start at the bottom and work your way up.
Memphis needs more accountability. That's what we don't have. There's no accountability here in this city. The people with money and the small percentage of decision makers, they can do exactly what they want to do. And the people that make the uproar, they don't have a big enough back to really make enough noise, and they know that. That's what's going on in Foot Home. That's what happened in Hurt Village back in the day. That's the norm. That's why I told that guy Thursday, I said, if he wants to be a good spokesperson for that ordeal, I'd be happy to do that, because whenever I get interviewed, they're gonna start off with former University of Memphis Tiger, whatever, and that's gonna, a lot of people that remember me, they're gonna listen to what I have to say just because of who I am, and I think it takes more names, and I think it takes strength in numbers, but I'm loving it. I'm behind what you guys are saying. My son is 2 streets over from the bus terminal. Like, literally 2 streets over from the bus terminal. So I see it a lot. I didn't know they was thinking about, you know, setting into the Bass Pro Shop and that. Like, I didn't know that. And, like, now that I'm thinking about running for mayor, I'm hearing so many issues and like, it's just, and everybody I talk to, black and white, important people, they're tired of the politics here in the city of Memphis. But, I mean, we look at a city of 700,000 people, and in 2009, he won with 68,000 votes. In 2011, AC won with 48,000 votes. So that was it wasn't a big turnout of voters. They don't want the guy, but what viable option do we have that's going to look out for the people? Who's going to get both sides of the track at that decision making table? And for years, both sides of the track has not been at that table. It's just been the big people who's making decisions. They don't care about us. They don't care about the little people. They don't care about the black poor people. They just don't.
This is Rose from Memphis, and I completely agree with you. Me and a couple of my friends were joking around a few times that there are churches in Binghamton and churches in Orange Mound, and these pastors roll up in these, like, Mercedes-Benz and things, and they come in and they preach, and then they go out to their house out in Collierville.
and it gets
to me. I recently lived 6 months in Orange Mound. I mean, I'm not talking outskirts. I mean the mound where that convenience store, I could walk a block away from it because I felt that because I'm becoming a public figure just like you are, that I needed to put my money where my mouth is, and I needed to be with the people that I helped. And I started out something called the Third Strike Program that helped ex-cons get their GEDs. You know, and because I was doing this, and yeah, I was doing it, and then going to my posh loft downtown, it felt hypocritical. And what me and a few of my friends were joking that, you know, maybe we should challenge our representatives to live in Binghamton, to live in Orange Mound, to actually live with people, with real people. And I will say that yes, those neighborhoods are rough, but I will tell you that I have never felt the sense of community that I have ever, the area that I was living in over there on Eccles, the sense of community where all my neighbors watched out for us. Yeah, I watched out for all of our neighbors. I had, you know, kids that were from down the street come up to my place for peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and I did it because I'm a neighbor. And I think that, again, our representatives are just so far removed from all of us. So, yeah, we do need an upright. We need to challenge them and saying, hey, how about you go to a corner grocery store and try to feed a family of four, even though there aren't any fresh vegetables? Why? There isn't a grocery store. It's a grocery store desert. How about you take the bus? How about you, in the rain, stand and see how unreliable they are? How about you go and work a minimum wage job at a factory? But they're not willing to.
$5 for milk.
Yeah, and then pay $5 for a gallon of milk and see how that hurts you. You know, I think that we need to challenge these people and challenge them on saying, hey, we vote you into office. How can you just stand on all of us like we don't even exist? And I challenge you that if you are going to run for mayor, I think that it would be amazing if you lived in Binghamton voluntarily and ran for mayor. Number one, because you were talking about how do you not sell out, I can tell you that from my standpoint and from other people's standpoint, if you are with the people actually living there, with the people, go to the same grocery stores, take the same buses, they will look to you not only as a leader, but as someone who speaks for them. And right now, and understands them, that understands that minimum wage job that they had to take 3 hours to a bus and then go and pay $5 for milk and how that hits your pocket. And then going home with your four children and watching them down that gallon of milk in 2 days over cereal and whatnot. I challenge that if you're going to run for mayor, you have to be mayor. Yeah, there's pros and cons to it, but I think that if you're going to do this, you need to go the full way, not halfway, not a quarter way. I think that our pastors need to do it. I think that us as people need to do it. I challenge anyone to remove themselves. And I think if you're going to run for mayor, I think that you would not only get the community behind you, but just the normal everyday people behind you, and that's a really powerful thing.
Right. And I think that's what I'm banking on. And I grew up in Herb Village. I grew up in a project. So I'm familiar with Binghamton and all the projects, actually. And I still know people in the projects because I can never forget where I came from. That's why I started my ministry 12 years ago in my old neighborhood in Greenlaw Community Center. But, I feel what you're saying, but the pastors, they don't have to do those things. And most of the politicians and the pastors, if they can't get something out of it, they're so comfortable, they're not going to listen to normal people or people whom, again, they can't get something from. And, again, that's what I hate. Like, that's, like, just because you can't get something out of it doesn't mean it doesn't deserve a voice. And I'll give you an example. Like I said, I have millionaire friends I have lunch with, and I have poor people. Even when we passed the law about the what is it? Your check engine light being on. Now, I have some friends, if their check engine light come on, they panic, they go into the shop right then and getting that taken care of. But then I have some friends who, if their light comes on, they don't pay attention to it. As long as their car can start and get them from A to B, and won't turn off on them, they're fine with their light being on. Now, once I'm mayor, I'm going to have both sides at the decision-making table. I'm just not going to have the people with the money or the people that can help me. I need to have both sides at the table, and I'm going to make the decision that's going to affect Memphis as a whole, not just the people with money. And we've never had that in this city. We've never had that in this city. And that's why I think my motto is going to be time for change, because the little man with no voice, it's time for him to be heard. And like even in the hood where I'm from, I have so many entrepreneur-type minds, but they have no resources. Now what I'm doing is, like a guy who wants to start, he's an ex-felon. I went to the prison, and I have a prison ministry also. But I have a guy who's an ex-felon. It's hard for him to get a job. He designs T-shirts. Okay, I have a millionaire friend who owns, well, he's over Impact Logistics. I connected them to. Now, every shirt that Impact Logistics does, my buddy is going to do that. And so I'm trying to say, okay, how can I bring everybody to the table where everybody can benefit from resources and we can get comfortable around each other? And the guy, and someone mentioned we have black churches, white churches. I don't feel comfortable in an all-white church. I've been there before. One of my board members invited me, and I obliged him. And I've been to an all-black church. But I'm a part of Fellowship Memphis, which is multiracial, and because that's what Memphis is. I think that's what God wants. He doesn't want an all-anything, because heaven's not going to be an all-anything. It's going to be multicultural. And, again, I can identify with Orange Mound, Binghamton. A lot of Binghamton guys played with me today against the inmates. They live there. I'm a part of Downline Institute, and a lot of our guys that went through Downline, they're stationed over there in Orange Mound. So I can identify with the small people, but I can identify with the others as well. And I think you can't forget where you come from. You got to listen to the older women who's in foot homes, and two-thirds of those people said, we don't want you to knock our projects down. And if two-thirds of the residents saying don't knock our projects down, you have to knock them down. But if you don't have someone taking off of those people, they're going to knock those projects down, and there's nothing we can do about it, unfortunately.
We have one more person that wants to say something.
This is Brandon again. I wanted to just leave it on one final note. In getting people to come together to basically support you for your mayor campaign, all I say is don't. If you look at how Obama ran for his presidency, he worked on the grassroots in South Side and West Side of Chicago, and once mm-hmm. he made the presidency, he kind of dropped it off, and mm-hmm. you know, he left Chicago in its condition, and he was well off. So all I can say is we just don't want that. Like where you start up and you leave people where they're in a position where they can't handle themselves. So,
right.
But that's all. Thanks.
Right.
And Dedrick, I just want to say thank you for opening your life up, basically, because how I learned about it, of course, is one of the guys who's very quiet here today, LaQuentin Golden. I learned about it, about your running through him, and then I immediately got on Facebook and looked you up and kind of just investigated your page, so to speak. But immediately you opened yourself up to a meeting, and, you know, you're allowing people to meet with you and talk and ask those questions. And so I just want to say thank you, and I hope that after meeting with you, and I hope that other people who are listening will take that opportunity to connect, ask questions, speak about what their passion and their purpose and what breaks their heart that's going on in the city. So I just challenge all of you that are listening to look Dedrick up, you know, go for yourself, you know, set something up with him, go for yourself. But these guys here, they are just, and girls, ladies, guys, are just a good group of people. And so they're young, they're wow, motivated, they motivate me. So I just say thank you and thank you for
that. They motivate me also. That's good. You can
right,
go to my website. I'm constructing my website now, but it's mayorgolden.com. And they kind of tell you a little bit about who I am, mayorgolden.com. And it's a comment box for now, so you can leave some comments and kind of tell me some things that's important to you. And when I do start getting in front of the microphone, I'm going to voice some of the things that I'm hearing so that it can be out there.
Okay, and that's mayorgolden.com.
MarryGoda.com in the comment section. Just put some things on your heart. And I'm taking notes now. I've really got a lot of information. So maybe in a couple months I'm going to start doing, because the news people and the commercial appeal have been trying to talk to me, but I'm not ready right now because I'm still trying to find out what are the real issues. And so once I got a grasp on all the issues, I'm going to make those issues known so they can sweep those issues under the carpet.
Right. Well, please continue to listen in to us as we plan to keep bringing it. We may just add a day or two on this, not wait and do this once a month because there's such a need and such a platform for this. So keep us on your piece of paper. Keep us up top, and we'll connect with you.
Got it. Work. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Okay. Well, we want to just thank everyone. Thank you for the listeners out in the chat. Thank you for those who are still online with us and stayed with us over an hour, going on 2 hours now. So thank you. Please just plan to spend your Saturday, last Saturday of each month, with us. And if that changes, we'll try to get the word out as quickly as possible. But the way to learn about the shows is, of course, through Facebook, and then you can always go to the Butterfly Evolution site as well, as we'll keep you updated there. So we want to thank you. Be mindful and open your eyes up to what's going on around your community, within your community, in your city, and just prepare to be a voice. Again, as I said early in the show, your table could turn immediately. Your son could go to school and be accused of something, or your daughter could go to school and be accused of something, and instantly your life will change because you now need an attorney. Some of these people that we've talked about tonight, that you're going to take your money and do what they want to do. So your life can change instantly, and you will need a voice. You will. So thank you to all of our listeners. This has been a great show. Anybody have any last words? Brandon's going to close it out for us. Barrett's going to say Brandon. Lord, I have a Brandon. Barrett's going to close it out for us. And, again, thank you all for listening.
Yeah, hey, this is Barrett. I know I've been relatively quiet, but it's been an honor to be a part of this experience right here with my young comrades, I guess. And it's been pretty appalling hearing Rose and Bennett talk about the budget that Memphis has been spending on the Bass Pro Shop and the pyramid, you know, like people who care absolutely nothing about us. And, you know, I can speak from experience on, you know, the budget cuts made from the City of Memphis Library, because I used to work there in the Cordova Branch Library, and that was a part of the layoff of all the part-time workers. And why I didn't suffer much, because I was a youngster and all that stuff, and I still had my mama to fall back on, I guess, at the time. But, you know, there was a lot of people who was left without jobs. We had to take care of their families who had been there for a good little minute. And, you know, like, speaking from experience, I know the kids got great use out of those computers and the library systems, like, all throughout the night. We could barely get them out at the library at 9 o'clock when it was closing down to cut those hours like that. I know it's pretty crazy, but
when did
who close? No, they didn't close. They laid off all the part time workers,
okay.
And that was in the whole city of Memphis.
Okay.
Yeah, so this has really opened my eyes up to a lot of things, and it pretty much shows how, I don't know how shady a lot. I feel a lot of people are, and like Rose is saying, they're really not in touch with the community. They don't know how it feels to be in our shoes. If they're, you know, willing to put people out their homes on the streets with nowhere to go, and it really should open your eyes up to a lot of things too. Like Brandon was saying, I think we should call them out and expose them. Like, they need to do their part. We're paying our money. We're paying our tithes. You know, they need to take action. So I'm gonna give the word back to Miss Tammy.
Barrett reminded me of the homeless. And speaking about homeless, as we did earlier, you know, recently, or maybe a couple of months ago, if you guys remember, where they were arresting or starting to arrest homeless people that would ask you for some change. So now they can arrest someone for asking me. Maybe I want to give you a dollar.
They were doing it downtown.
Right. And so coming from the homeless ministry, I used to do that quite a lot, every week actually, and it took its toll. I was reminded when Rose talked about going into the city, I remember this guy asked me, I had given another homeless guy a coat, and I didn't. That's the only coat I had in my car. And so he saw that, and he said, do you have another one? And it was raining, and I didn't have another one. And I just said, you know, I'm sorry, I don't. But what I should have did was went to some store and bought one because it was raining and it was really cold that night. And I came home, and I could not sleep. My spirit tossed and turned. I cried all night because all I thought about was I need to go find him. I need to take him a coat. You know, it broke my heart. And it, again, it amazes me. People can walk by and not and see that and not be moved by it. So even that's a topic that we want to talk about because that's a whole nother conversation about how our homeless people are treated, even within the homeless shelters. Women cannot take their sons with them at a certain age that are on the street. And we have women with family, with children that are homeless. We have that. We have the homeless shelters who are the people in there, the stuff that you donate, they take it home. Okay?
Pay to play.
So this is stuff that the homeless people have told us, you guys need to send 60 Minutes in here or something. Someone needs to act like they're homeless and see what we go through. And then they have to pay to go into the homeless shelter. But we're giving millions of dollars away to, what's the name of it? Fast Pro Shop. That's Pinnacle. That's crazy. We have to speak up, people. We have to create a voice. And it starts with you because don't let your table turn and no one's there. So that being said, anybody before we? Great show. Thank you all for tuning in. We're going to end there. We'll keep you posted about the next show. And Subliminal Thought. Remember, Subliminal Thoughts is on Facebook as well. Butterfly Evolution page is on there as well. And, again, the shows will be posted out there far in advance. And we thank you. Remember to bring your topics. Bring suggestions for topics that you have. Thank you and have a good night.